This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
So here we are, real live, here at Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet to Dr. Jeff, as well as here on Instagram Live. Of course, as you know, here for your pets, and hope you had a great week, and here we are. So anything you want to talk about is great. We had a little misery here in the house where we actually, our piping is like old galvanized, and you know, at one point, the main water line splits for the house itself, and then we have a pool in the back and the garage and another little back house. And at that juncture, it literally disintegrated. So there's water all over the place, and we have to shut off the main. So we're living. What we do is we can't have done laundry like about 5 days. And what we have to do is we have to turn the water on. It's going to get sopping wet in the backyard, and that's what we can flush a toilet or take a quick shower. It's crazy. I mean, I tell you, you don't realize, but living without water in your house, it's not so easy. So anyway, we got a plumber coming tomorrow, and I'm afraid that bill is going to be, I'm sure they're going to say we need to literally take out all the old galvanized and replace it with new copper or that PVC piping, whatever they're using nowadays. But not looking forward to that bill, I'll tell you that. So hope you're all having a nice weekend so far. And any questions about your pets, now is a good time to ask. I did it. I had my third dog. It's no big deal because it's in 40 years. That actually flew out from someplace far. This was New York for me to do surgery. And, it was so interesting because, he was out. He's a friend of mine. His brother lives here, who's a physician. And Mari is also a physician. And the two brothers got two sister littermates, Shelties. And I take care of Charlotte. That's the one here. And Sammy just came out for, to visit. And of course, they don't want to leave him alone, home alone. So they're from New York. So we're talking. I'm petting Sammy. He's on my lap at my friend's house. And I notice some fatty tumors and then a mass on the elbow. And I mentioned the tumor. And he goes, oh, yeah, the doctor said that's just a lipoma. And I go, no. This is not a lipoma. This is a solid mass, a tumor. It's got to come out. And the doctor said they would do it, leave it alone. So we arranged him a few weeks later. Actually, he came in this past Thursday, flew out with Sammy. And Friday, we anesthetized her. I removed the tumor. And my friend Larry, who, as I said, he's a physician. They're both physicians, but Larry does surgery. He scrubbed in with me. I think it was the first time. Now, I've scrubbed in before with board certified veterinary surgeons, but I don't think I've ever scrubbed in before with an MD surgeon. And we had so much fun. It was great. So we removed the tumor. It was, as I suspected, an ugly, ugly mess. We don't know what it is yet. We're obviously sending it off for biopsy. We'll see. But whatever it is, it's not good. And also, we did take some of the little fatty tumors off. We did her dentistry. I mean, she's 13 years old with a heart murmur. So it's like, I don't know how many more opportunities we're going to have to anesthetize this gorgeous little adorable Sheltie. So since we had her down and we're monitoring every few minutes, we're taking vitals. She did amazingly well. We, of course, administer surgical fluids, but because of our heart disease, we didn't do as much as we normally would. And anyway, but it was really cool. As I said, that's one for my books to say, yep, I scrubbed in along with an MD surgeon to do some work on a dog. And hey, I mean, look, the MDs, they often practice on animals when they're going through programs. Probably now, not as much, because what's happening is, I guess with the new thoughts about, how to use animals, what we're doing, animal rights issues, et cetera, and PETA out there, most schools are no longer using live animals. They're using cadavers, of course. And so, I don't know if I like that. What we did in Davis was very different. Some of you may hate it, and I get it. But as far as me graduating with literally surgical skill, having worked on a real live animal. So what Davis did is the following. And again, this is 45 years ago, so don't get mad at me. And they've changed their ways too. So they had shelter dogs that were literally on death row. So they would basically, we would take those dogs. We were each group of three or four CERT students going through surgical rotation. That was our dog for the quarter. And what we would do is under strict supervision from the clinicians and the residents, the surgical residents, we would start from anesthesia. We would do different surgeries one by one, and we would watch the dogs recover. None of these were life-threatening surgeries. And it was really, really, it was great because we were talking, doing a splenectomy, doing an intestinal surgery, doing a gastrotomy, opening up the stomach and then sewing the stomach. Things that we will be doing once we graduate veterinary school. Of course, spay neuter. If it was a male, we neutered. If it was a female, we spayed. And every time we recovered them and we had them, they were our dogs for the quarter. So all of these animals are just going through things that dogs would normally go through. Then at the very last surgery, which is the most invasive, we did what many schools did, but they used many dogs during the quarter. This was only one dog per team, and we would euthanize while they were anesthetized. So, you know, again, was it humane? These dogs were going to be anesthetized anyway. We got to take care of them. We would watch them recover. We would, you know, they would be our dog for the quarter. We'd walk them and feed them. And it was really, at least they had some interaction other than just being put to sleep. So they served a dual purpose. They were put to sleep anyway, which is what their unfortunate destiny was. But they also helped train us, we veterinarians of the future, to be very competent in surgery. And I will tell you, I know that this is maybe politically incorrect, right? PC, and not be incorrect, PIC. But when I look at young veterinarians today, recent graduates, they don't have near the experience. You do not want a young recent graduate doing a surgery other than maybe a spay or neuter, because what they do is they take the spay neuter clinics, so that they may be somewhat competent in, but otherwise, I'd be very hesitant. And shoot me, but I'm telling you, I see it when I see young doctors come in and I cringe. They have no real surgical experience, and they're going to do surgery on your dog. And now they have these cadavers, sort of made up of certain rubbers and nylons, and they can basically make them bleed. They make the tissue look so real, and they're really not real. And you get a better feel of cutting what tissue, real tissue feels like, what happens when you get a spurt or when you get a bleeder. At least it prepares you a little better. But I got to tell you, there's really nothing that can prepare you better for a real surgery than having done real surgery. So let's see, some questions. There was a question here. Maybe silly, but if my dog is due for three vaccines, do you think it's better to break them up or do it together? Well, that's not a silly question. So here's the thing. When you're using a vaccine that's what we call bivalent, so it might be distemper parvo with lepto, okay? Then you only have one. You have the immune cells that you're looking to build, okay, which is usually it's the bacterium, or in this case, the viruses. In the case of lepto, it's a bacterium. And they are denatured. They are deactivated, inactivated vaccine. So they're meant to stimulate the immune system for the body to make its own immune cells. That's exactly what's supposed to happen with the vaccine. There's the amount of immune cells that you supply, that you inject, is that what's going to cause a vaccine reaction? And the answer is, interestingly, according to both veterinary and MD immunologists, they say the same thing. The body is capable of dealing, as it does daily on a regular basis, thousands of viruses, bacteria, and they're primed up all the time. That's not the problem. What is the problem? The problem is when dogs have reactions to vaccines, it's not the antigen. No, it is the preservatives that go into it, all right? The actual liquid portion of the vaccine that you have to mix it in, okay, called the adjuvant. So we have the adjuvant potentially are reactive, okay? The preservatives. So when you have to give two or three shots, it's not the antigens that may be the problem. but it's the added adjuvant and preservatives. So to answer the question, is it silly to break them up? A lot of very more naturopathic veterinarians will only do one vaccine, wait a week, you do another, do another. Now, if you do distemper parvo together, then that's only one set. You're getting two added. Now, I also like they have now vaccines that are low dose, and they put everything in, but just to half the amount of diluent. So that makes it even a little safer. You're getting less. So my general rule of thumb is I will do a distemper parvo together, an oral Bordetella, and maybe one more depending on the size of the dog. If it's a small dog or very young, I will not. I will try to break them up. So, but again, it really depends on the doctor. But I found that the vaccine part, the vaccines that really make the most, give the most reaction are due to the adjuvant and the preservative as opposed to the actual antigen. So just so you know. So in answer to your question, are you wrong? If it makes you feel better, do it, but that's okay. How am I doing? I'm doing good. All right. And all right. Fostering a pug with a keratoconus on his eye looks like a little bubble. Can you talk about these? So first of all, it depends on, is it just an irritation or a problem in the cornea? Is the cornea tissue broken? In other words, can you, when you do an eye stain, a fluorescein stain, does the corneal surface pick up the stain or not? Right? If it doesn't, then, you know, these things, sometimes they can be removed surgically. I would refer that, of course, to a board-certified veterinary ophthalmologist. Sometimes if they can be shrunk and the corneal tissue is intact, meaning there's no stain uptake, then you can try a corticosteroid type of medication and see. And also, you want to really thoroughly check the eyelids, because sometimes these are caused by chronic irritation. So you want to look at the lids for trichiasis or dystichiasis. Those are aberrant lashes. Those are lashes from three or four multiple lashes going out of the same pore in the eyelid, or one's growing aberrantly. Instead of coming up, it's going in and it's rubbing against the eyeball. So these are things that can cause these types of scarring and irritations. So if the dog is not squinting, does not appear to be in pain, and the eye stain is negative, I would start by trying a triple antibiotic or an ointment with some corticosteroid. And if that doesn't help at all, I would make an appointment with a veterinary ophthalmologist. So anyway, if you have any questions, you can reach out to me. Pugs, by the way, are French Bulldogs and Pekingese and Boston Terriers and all these Japanese Chin, all these bug-eyed, prominent eye dogs with the pushed-in faces, they're all at higher risk because those eyes are more subjected to irritation. And that's the thing. So we want to make sure that it's definitely, you see it more in those breeds. All right. Hi, doctor. Can Moose still get parvo shot number two on schedule? Or does, no. He can probably, if he's doing well in every other way, then yes. You know, again, we also always have to look at what condition, and is that more dangerous than getting parvo? And if the dog is going to be subjected, he's still a pup, and he needs a second shot, there are very few things that would stop me from getting it, unless, you know, even if they have an upper respiratory infection, which is the most common thing we see, you know, that's usually Bordetella, it's a bacterial infection. I would say if they're still not acting sick, i.e., are they still eating, are they still running around, are they still playing, et cetera, I would give the shot. If they are infirm, I mean, they're sick, they're not doing well, they're sort of out of energy, they're depressed, lethargic, they're not eating, they have diarrhea, then I would not give the shot. So it all depends on immunologically how strong they are. Take an intern, GBA. Do I teach new grads or take an intern? I usually do. I love it. I love mentoring. I get a lot of students, vet students from different schools that spend several weeks during their senior years. A lot of times they have electives where they can go to a general practice and, well, they volunteer. It's part of their program. They get their academic credits for it. And I love doing that. And many of those students of mine, I wouldn't say they're really not my students. They're the students of the university, respective university, but they come and spend their 2 or 3 weeks with me. Literally, I've been really doing well outside in school. And when I have college students doing it, I think I have four, actually maybe five pre-vets Well, now they're not pre-vets. Now they're vet students that came to me and worked with me either volunteering or for pay if we needed a tech. And they're now in veterinary school. That to me is the best. And I love when they come and they tell me that they're doing so well and they get it because of the times they spend with us. So that's really cool. All right. See the live views done by me. Okay, we will, Carly. Add a moderator. Yes, that's right. Okay, who else? And Moose still get. Okay, here. What product do you recommend for ear cleaning for a German Shepherd? So there are a lot of really good ear cleaners out there. Of course, I'm going to recommend mine called Hear You Now. It is really good, but no, I would be silly to tell you that it's the only one, it's the best one. When it comes to these things, there are so many of them that are so similar in their ingredients that they're very similar and I'm sure work fine. The key really is not necessarily just the product, but it's how to use it properly. And we're going to talk about that as soon as we come back from our break. So stay tuned. Don't go away.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back live on Pet Life Radio. So we're just talking about ultrasound specialists coming this month. So if I can have a specialist, I have a cardiologist that comes in also. Formerly, but still works a little bit at VCA, and I have my ultrasound specialist. I like, first of all, it's great for my clients because they get to come where they're comfortable. It's great for me because I get to often be involved and I learn a lot from him. And he's such a master. I do a lot of ultrasound myself, but if it's something where I'm not looking at something similar, simple or major, or using the ultrasound to access a sample or do a lymph node, I'm good at that stuff. But sometimes to tell the subtle differences between normal tissue, abnormal tissue, where the masses are, this guy is amazing. And he's so far has not led me astray with his diagnostics and his diagnoses. So I do like it. So I have to call. I know he finally took a well-deserved vacation and I'll probably talk to him tomorrow and see what his schedule is. So yes, my products work great. Yeah, I hope so, but they are good. Oh, so now that we're back, let's talk about, it's not always the product you're using. There's so many good ear cleaners out there with different ingredients that really break down the debris, et cetera. The key really is how are you using it? So for one thing, you want to put the stuff in. Do not start with any kind of cotton swab or anything. You start with literally filling that canal. Aggressively filling it with your cleaner and then aggressively massaging it. That'll loosen up a lot of that deep debris and actually lets it float to the top. All right. And I do a couple of rinses before. Then I back off and I will give a really quick blow. Lift the ear that you're just working on and blow right in the ear. That usually, I can't promise 100%, that dog will start shaking his head. Between the being blown in the ear and the fluid in there, they're going to shake. And a lot of that debris is going to fly out. And I do that two or three times until it looks pretty quickly. Then I'll start with a swab. Now, you really, for what I teach people to do, depending on the size of the ear, is you are not to go down all the way down the ear with the canal with a swab because you'll very likely rupture an eardrum. So usually I say you hold the cotton swab about, here I would show you, but I would about, an inch away from the tip, not the top of the cotton, but the actual tip of the swab. In a big dog, it might be an inch and a half away. And you hold these two fingers. That when you're putting it in the canal, you can't go any deeper than that because these two fingers are going to stop you. And just you kind of gently wob up. You're not trying to stuff it in. You're trying to go from a side and scoop it up. It's a certain finesse. And then you put some more stuff in, shake again, set more stuff to the top. Do not go all the way down the ear with a swab, okay? The second thing that you have to know. So when you are given medication to put in an ear, it's very important to do that properly as well. Now, there are two types of ear nozzles that they have, okay? One is a long tube, long nozzle, this is what's going in the ear. And the instructions might be put 3 to 4 drops in the ear. Wow. When you have it all the way in the ear, like they want you to get to where it needs to be gotten down deep into the canal, how do you count drops? Or if you hold it way up here to count drops, how is the stuff going to get to where it needs to go? Or if you have something that's more liquid and you drop 1, 2, 3, 4, the liquid stuff may go down. But what I've learned from a veterinary dermatologist specializing in ears, great guy. What we do is now we don't tell counting drops or dropping or putting it. No, we do it by ml. So we take the medicine. We give the owners a tuberculin skinny 1 cc syringe, and it might be 0.3, 0.4, 0.5, usually up to big 0.8 on a big dog. If it's a giant breed, maybe 1 ml. And we put the syringe in the ear just a little bit, and then we gently push the liquid in, and that way we know exactly how much we're delivering and it's going to where it needs to go. So that is the really ideal way to give medications, take care of these ears. If you have a persistent problem, go see your veterinarian for sure. What itch shampoo? Yeah. So what itch is it's a great shampoo. It's soothing and it has pramoxine in it, which is an antihistamine. So as with any medicated shampoo, not only do you want to lather them up, but that lather needs to sit there for at least 15 minutes, maybe longer. So don't worry, the dogs don't mind. Who cares? They don't care. In fact, they may even like it. I just know my dogs, two of my dogs swim and they don't ask for a towel every time they get out of the pool. So they're just happy walking around being wet. So anyway, what itch is great, but anything you really need to get to work, it should be sitting on for at least 15 minutes, and that would work better. My aunt Steph is limping on and off her right leg. Seemed fine a couple of days ago after playing outside this morning. She just started favoring the leg series. Yeah, okay. First of all, makes a big difference is which leg, okay? Is it a front leg or a back leg? If it's a front leg and it's how old the aunt Steph is, I need to know also how old she is. Because, there are a lot of things. It could be anything from arthritis. Usually with arthritis, it's worse after lying down for a while. But once they get up, they quickly warm out of it. So right there, it could be arthritis. And if that's a front leg. And you're looking mostly at elbows for them, maybe a carpus. It also depends how it started. Did it start after a known injury? In which case, it's a soft tissue strain. Like she jumped off of something, she fell, she hurt, twisted it. Then you're probably looking at a soft tissue strain. If it's just an insidious onset that happens to be slowly worsening over a long amount of time, yes, then I think about arthritis. Now, if it's a back leg, that's a different complicator. And that is a cruciate ligament. So what I do is I want to see these dogs walk. I want to see if they're toeing down. Did it happen acutely, meaning suddenly? If it's an Amstaff, sudden onset, and she's toeing a leg and still favoring it even, then I would 100% put that high on my list. That needs to be seen by your veterinarian and taken an x-ray and looking for what's called a drawer sign. And if it's not that and it's happened slowly, then again, you can look at, I would start with rest and a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory coming from your veterinarian. If you, for peace of mind, if you want to start with an x-ray, there's nothing wrong with that. But here's why it's important to know how something started. Because if I have something that started suddenly and I take x-rays and the x-rays show hip dysplasia, is that my diagnosis? Because I took that same x-ray 6 months earlier, I would have seen the same hip dysplasia, but he wasn't limping. Or in this case, she wasn't limping. So you got to put the history together and see what makes sense. All of a sudden, arthritis isn't there for years and sudden, overnight, starting presenting a problem. It's a slow, insidious onset. So it's very important to get the history. If you want to send me the x-rays, if the x-rays were taken, but also to know which leg, front leg or back leg makes a big difference. Fur flush ears, is that, yes, You can use the fur flush. That's a good. That's a overall. You can use it for the skin, and also you can use it for the ears. Snow. Is there any surgery to help collapsing trachea? Boy, I wish there was. So one of my former students that I told you worked, volunteered with me, was a tech. They went to vet school, UC Davis. Her name is Dr. Jana Norris. Went on to do a surgical residency. And when I heard that she graduated Davis, of course, called her, congratulating her. I said, so what do you work on in your residency? She goes, we're looking on a new technique for collapsing trachea. I said, oh, fantastic. Because everything else in the past has failed, made it worse. So about a year later, year and a half later, I spoke to Jana again. I said, by the way, how's that new thing you were trying about the... She goes, yes, it wasn't working. It's a really tough problem because whatever you use, whether it's an external stent or an internal, if it's internal and it's pushing out to keep the trachea open, it usually puts too much pressure against the body, the tracheal wall, and cuts off blood supply. If it's on the outside, it has to be anchored at different spots to keep it in place. And where you tie your sutures to anchor it, it starts thin necrosing. It is really a very, very, very challenging condition to deal with. Happens usually in very small breeds, more than big breeds. But I will tell you, in my 40 years, there's only two dogs that I had to euthanize because of collapsing trachea. Most of them, they do okay. And the best med to use, if you can get it nowadays, is the hydrocodone. It's under the name Hycodan or Tussagon. It's hydrocodone bitartrate. It's a controlled substance. It needs a special slip, from your veterinarian, a prescription pad that is good for made for controlled substances. And if you can find it, what I tell people to do is call around. Now here in LA, there are some compounding pharmacies. One is Mix Lab, which I really like. I believe they have the active ingredients and can make it up. But that still is the best thing. And if you want to also protect against any kind of secondary infection, maybe early on, just to rule out like a tracheitis, you can also start something like Clavamox or doxycycline. Let's see. Back leg, 3.8 years. Okay. So if it's a back leg and did it come on suddenly? It started suddenly. She didn't fall. Okay. Well, in that case, my front runner for now, without seeing the dog, without seeing the walking, without palpating, is a cruciate ligament injury. Just based on the age and breed and knowing how it easy, they're so muscular on the back ends that they can outpower the cruciate ligament. So that's where I would start my search. I would start with an exam and seeing if we can get what's called a drawer sign, an anterior drawer sign, which is pretty much diagnostic for cruciate injury. Then I would take an x-ray and I would look in the x-ray and see, compare the right and the left leg or the both legs, which leg it is, the right leg. And I would look for effusion in the joint. Now, let me tell you something about effusion. As some of you may know that know me, I had a torn meniscus, I'd say about 2 or 3 months ago. And I was nursing it like I did when I had my left. It was my right leg and my left. And it was getting worse and worse and worse. And I noticed I could not even bend my knee. The pain was excruciating. I would sit down. I would have to keep my leg extended. I had to go stairs one at a time. Disaster. And I noticed a lot of puffiness above my knee and the distal femur area. So I took video pictures, sent it to my friend, an orthopedic surgeon. He says, Jeff, that's effusion. So I go in to see him. And even though his real specialty now is only knee replacements, he's so specialized. But when he went to medical school, his love was non-surgical treatments for stifle diseases. So any kind of pain, arthritis, et cetera. So he was the perfect guy. Went to see him. He drained 48 cc's of fluid out of my knee. I literally jumped off the table. I was better it was crazy. So I know the pain associated with effusion in a joint. So that could be a problem. But unfortunately, most doctors aren't going to open up a joint or stick a joint to take care of the effusion. So, but it does cause some pain and discomfort. So if the x-rays support effusion in the joint and the palpation supports an anterior drawer sign, meaning cruciate injury, my recommendation 100% is going to be surgery. And for a big dog like that, TPLO is called for hips. This is a tibial plateau leveling osteotomy. TPLO is the treatment of choice, done typically by board-certified surgeons, though there are some GPs that have taken the special coursing and do a lot of surgery that are doing it as well. So you need to get on the horn and check out. We have a board-certified surgeon who comes to our hospital and does the surgery by us. All right. What causes failure? It's just an age thing and a breed thing is what causes it. All right. So once again, for a guy who loves to talk, I've taken you over time. I hope you don't hate me for it. So if you have any questions, you can reach out to me anytime. Love helping you with your pets. And as I said, I'm available through on PetLife Radio, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, Dr. Jeff at DrJeff.com. Here on Instagram, just go ahead and you can, you know, type away and I will be happy to help you if I can. And if you need help and you have like a blood work you'd like me to review or any kind of x-ray, you can. And also tell your friends and all of you that are not using AirVet. AirVet is a lifesaver. It's a money saver because it really does. I've had so many people that are thrilled. And when I take an AirVet call, not from one of my clients, and I say, "Sal, is this your first time using it?" "Oh no, I love AirVet. We have over 7.8 thousand 4.9 plus star reviews on the App Store. So people, pet parents love it. It's going to save you time. It's going to save you money. And now that we're offering it as an employee benefit to many, many large companies, the employers love it because their employees are spending less time out of the office to take care of their pets because they can get their problems answered most of the time on AirVet. And even if they have to go in, then they know it's not urgent after their AirVet call, that virtual visit. And so now they can wait and they make an appointment. And instead of running and waiting for hours upon hours in an emergency or urgent care, they're comfortably waiting to see their regular veterinarian. So something you might want to consider doing. We get great, great reviews on that too. Of course, here on Pet Life Radio, anytime you want to get a hold of me, just send me a text. We'd love to also on either Instagram, there are a lot of people that are shy, but you can join us live here on Pet Life Radio and our Instagram. And we can we'll cut the screen in half and we can see you with your pet. If you want something you want to show me, et cetera, we can do that. And also, if I can help in any way, I'd love to do that. All right. So same bat time, same bat channel here next week. Hope you have a wonderful week, everybody. And we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.